Thank you, Madam Clerk, and welcome to the August 18th, 2009 meeting of the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors. If you would all please rise and follow me in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And Madam Clerk, if you would, please tell us about the changes to today's agenda.
We have an amended item to A11, which is a submittal of a resolution authorizing execution of notice of easement deed from the San Luis Obispo County Flood Control and Water Conservation District to Pacific Gas and Electric Company, 4th District. It's recommended approval and instruct chairperson to sign. Staff is recommending the agenda packet be amended to label the item A11. A15 is a request by Social Services to approve, one, the acceptance of the State Office of Child Abuse Prevention grant funds in the amount of $1,236,000 to continue and expand the Supporting Father Involvement Study, and two, to approve a corresponding renewal contract to the Community Action Partnership of San Luis Obispo Incorporated in the amount of $1,213,932 for fiscal years 2009-2010 through 2001-2012. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign. Staff is recommending this item be amended by replacing the transmittal and staff report to add language to the recommendation that designates and authorizes individuals to sign invoices on behalf of the agency. Staff is also recommending the cover sheet be amended to state that the contract is for fiscal years 2009-2010 through 2011-2012. The replacement pages are attached for your approval. We have A17, which is a request by the Sheriff Coroner to approve, one, a request adjustment to Fund Center 136, Sheriff Coroner, in the amount of $72,650 from the Federal Asset Forfeiture Trust Fund and $5,200 from the State Asset Forfeiture Fund, and two, an amendment to the fixed asset list to add a graffiti eradication vehicle and associated equipment. It's recommended approval and instruct chairperson to sign. Staff is recommending this item be amended to state the 4th-5th vote is required.
All right. Thank you very much. That brings us to our consent agenda. I do have a couple of requests to speak on consent. We'll start with John Summer, followed by Rick Matthews.
Thank you. My name is John Summer, and I am the new executive director for the San Luis Obispo County Visitors and Conference Bureau, and I'm delighted to be here before you today. I want to thank the board for its support of the Visitors Conference Bureau and also for the approval of funding for us, because as you know, tourism being just an essential component of our economy in this county, it is important that we speak as one voice when asking people to come here and stay longer and spend more money. The Visitors and Conference Bureau is that marketing entity for the county as a whole, and I must tell you that we have some very exciting things planned for the future. I think that you'll be seeing San Luis Obispo County more and more on the eyes of visitors who want to come and experience this incredible part of California. So again, I want to thank you for funding us. Your support is essential to us, and your money will be well invested, I will tell you that. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Summer. Mr. Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Summer, if you could, I would be very interested in getting to talk with you, so you might want to call up to our offices.
Absolutely.
I think it would be helpful. We all,
okay,
I think, spoke
right
with
away.
The interim, Mr. Burns, and it would be good to chat with you as well.
Okay. Will do. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Matthews.
Good morning.
Followed, I expect, by Ms. Nash-Carter.
Honorable Chairman and Board, my name is Rick Matthews. I represent the 5th District on the Parks and Recreation Commission. And one of the best examples of the old adage, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, is exemplified by the county's Parks and Recreation program. At Ounce of Prevention comes as the county's core goals are promoted. A safer, healthier, more livable, more prosperous community is achieved as the Parks program is itself more healthy. While we in the Parks movement have felt very much under-prioritized historically at the county, hence the dead limb that we found ourselves perched on, as described by the grand jury a couple of years ago. But I'm feeling better about your board's understanding of what a healthy park system can do for a county like San Luis Obispo. At the Parks Commission, it's our job to emphasize the importance as well as advise your board regarding issues of parks, as the report that is part of your consent agenda does. But we've been busy over the past several years. We've delivered a fresh new parks and recreation element to the general plan. We've opened several dog parks around the county and promoted trail systems and managed to help secure some very significant parks and open space property. And when I say we, of course, I mean the Parks Division under the leadership of Pete Jenny, who is slowly retiring before our very eyes, but to whom we are grateful beyond words for the outstanding job that he's done, especially with such severe budget constraints. But under the new leadership of Curtis Black, we feel we're poised for the next step. And so with your help, it's off the dead limb and into the bright new future of a healthy, robust park system. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Matthews. Ms. Nash-Kerner.
Thank you, Mr. Gibson, honorable board members, members of staff, and members of the public. I'm Pandora Nash-Kerner, the chair of the Park Commission for the county. And I think what we prepared for you was more of a case statement than an annual report. It provides, I think, the rationale and the justification for a sustainable park program and a reminder to your board of the economic value of parks to San Luis Obispo County. It focuses, I think, primarily on the potential of parks, and we certainly are asking your support today to help us create ways to achieve it. We're here today to underscore the issues and the solutions that our report brought out. We're not here to ask you for money. You can take a deep breath. The underlying message of the report, as the grand jury concluded in 2005, when the economy was actually robust, is that the Parks Division has not kept pace with growth, and there will be continued deterioration of parklands and existing facilities unless something is done. The result of that report, as most of you know, is that you, your board in 2005 directed that a Blue Ribbon Task Force be created to make recommendations to you, which we did in February 2007. The findings can be summarized into four categories: fiscal stability, organizational structure, collaborative planning, and community involvement. We are very grateful to this board for your involvement, most recently evidenced by your involvement in helping us find an innovative and visionary leader to fill the shoes, which will be very tough to fill, of Pete Jenny, who, as Rick just said, is slowly retiring. With the changes that you're making here in the county, we see that this is an opportunity for a brand new beginning, and we believe that your board has the commitment to parks to get us off that dead limb. The statistics in our case report, our case study, show how other counties throughout the United States have used parks to create cost-effective solutions to lower costs for law enforcement, reduce crime, increase work productivity, attract tourist dollars, and the details are all provided for you. The economy and the budget shouldn't stop us from doing, I think, the most important next step that we can do, and that is to plan and create a strategic plan for solutions for parks and how we do get off that dead limb. We do have an opportunity for a new beginning. Parks offers unquestionable value, and we ask that you take action today to investigate ways to create a sustainable park program. And I think the questions before you are, where do you want parks to be in 5 years, and how do we help you get there? Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nash-Kerner. That's my last request to speak on consent. I'll close it to the public, and before I bring it back to the board, let me take this opportunity to welcome Mr. Curtis Black, who is a deputy director of the General Services Agency for Parks. And Curtis comes to us from the city of Sunnyvale, and we are more than pleased to have you aboard, sir. We appreciate your taking this position. With that, I'll bring it back to my colleagues for items to pull, starting with Mr. Meacham.
comment on A13, sir?
Yes, Mr. Patterson.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to pull A7.
A7. Mr. Oshajian.
None for me, thank you.
And Mr. Hill.
None for me, thank you.
And I'd like to make a quick comment on A17 myself. So with that, let's start, Mr. Patterson, with A7.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want to thank Ms. Nashkarner and Mr. Matthews, both representatives on the Parks and Rec Commission, for coming in this morning and speaking to the annual summary. But in talking with Mr. Matthews about the presentation, I was hoping that we could include in the annual report, since it is just that, the accomplishments of the Parks and Rec Commission over the past year, and also include what your plans are for this next year, so it would be a more comprehensive report. And my suggestion is that we don't act on it today, that we actually let the Parks Commission take a look at that and include those items in the report. Ms. Nashkarner, you mentioned suggestions that are in the report, but also ways that perhaps we can move forward to make a more successful and sustainable parks program, and having those specifics in the report would be of great value to us. And I know the Parks Commission, despite the fact, and the parks program in general, have not necessarily received the funding that perhaps they could have over the years, you've still made great accomplishments, and we'd like that noted in the report, since this is for the record. So that would be my suggestion, that we pull and act on it separately, actually not act on it at all until the commission has an opportunity to include those elements as well.
I agree. Also, talked to my District 2 Commissioner, Ms. Nashkarner, about this a little bit. I think it is a compelling case that the report makes for the value of parks, and there's no doubt about that. But I, too, would like to see a little bit of the strategic thinking of the commission as to what are the priorities, what has been recently accomplished, what's our baseline, and where might we go in the next year to 5 years, because it is a daunting task, especially in this budget situation. And so I would agree with your thought on that, Mr. Patterson. Any other comment on that item? Seeing none, then we'll go to Mr. Meacham on A13.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just briefly, I wanted to recognize the fact that the Reading for Life will take place in Paso Robles this weekend. This is the 11th consecutive year in Paso Robles. In 25 years nationwide, they've been doing this. I don't think there's anyone that has not been touched in some form or fashion by cancer. And these folks do an incredible job raising funds for the American Cancer Society. So I will be there this weekend to deliver a proclamation on behalf of the board. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. And on A17, this is an item coming forward from the Sheriff's Department to allocate money for a graffiti eradication trailer. This is one of the couple of things about this. This is one of the little things, if you will, that our Anti-Gang Coordinating Commission has brought forward in dealing with an incipient gang problem in our various of our communities in the county. The commission has looked at a lot of different strategies, including prevention and intervention at an early stage. And one of the things we can do in New York City, I think, is called the broken window syndrome, that when graffiti appears, our sheriff's department will document it and then get rid of it. And this truck, which is being very efficiently constructed out of pieces that the sheriff department has investigated, will be able to color match and paint over graffiti, and we hope in a very short time. I should note that the funding comes out of the asset forfeiture fund, assets from drug cases mostly, and I've questioned the sheriff on a couple of occasions about the allocation of monies from that fund. I want to indicate for the record that I wholeheartedly endorse this expenditure. I think it's just the sort of thing that we should be doing. So with that, I would entertain a motion on consent.
So second.
And is that with item A7
pulled? Yes, sir.
All right. We have, we'll call it Mr. Oshajian and
doesn't matter.
Mr. Meacham and some combination. Second, Mr. Meacham and Mr. Oshajian. We'll take a roll call. We'll take a roll call vote then, please.
Mr. Meacham?
Aye.
Mr. Asajian?
Aye.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
And Mr. Gibson?
Yes. With that, we come to our presentation calendar. I'd entertain a motion on that.
Second.
And we have a motion and a second. And another roll call vote, please. Mr. Meacham?
Mr. Meacham?
Aye.
Mr. Asajian?
Aye.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes. Our first presentation today is actually a presentation to us from the Commission on Aging, and I'd like to bring forward Ms. Kathleen Bellefontaine for that presentation.
Thank you. I've been told that I have 5 minutes. Is that?
Well, I think five to ten, I think we can easily easily accommodate here. We don't want you. I know.
All right, well, I'm not planning to go that long. You've got me trained. 3 minutes. Okay. Good morning. I'm Kathleen Bellefontaine, and I'm the chairperson for the San Luis Obispo Commission on Aging. And I'm taking this opportunity this morning because we are on the consent agenda. The commission has submitted its annual report, and I thought that it would be an opportunity for me to let the community know a little bit about the Commission on Aging, and also to, of course, advocate that the board will wish to keep us. So just a little bit about our background. We were established in 1984 by the Board of Supervisors. We are have a membership that includes a representative from each district, and we have members of agencies in the community that are on our commission, such as District Attorney's Office, Department of Social Services, Area Agency on Aging, just to name several. And then we have members at large. And the members at large are senior advocates for a variety of senior concerns. We're all volunteers. And we have persons who represent Veterans Affairs, transportation, housing, financial matters, delivery of affordable medical and social services. Our goals are reflected in our last fiscal year that were in the report. The goals that we wanted to follow as commissioners for that last year were access to affordable and quality health care, affordable senior housing, senior isolation and depression issues, and transportation options. So in order for the commissioners to know the status of these community services that affect the adequacy of meeting these needs, we keep updated on the most current and actions and plans of the county agencies that are responsible to provide these services. Commissioners have many targeted presentations, as are listed in our annual report, to inform us of these issues. But the public should know just a few of the key agencies that I'm referring to. County Housing and Development Department have met with commissioners to inform us about the county housing element, which of course includes the amount of housing that's being built or planned for building for seniors, for affordable housing, not just for seniors, but also for their families or caregivers, people that we need to help support seniors in their older years when they may be failing. The DMV has come to us about the implementation of their Ombudsman for Seniors. I don't know how many of you know there's an Ombudsman for Seniors. Rideshare comes to keep us updated because they're always doing good work, and so we're keeping up to date on those things. So as I will show in our report, there are many more presentations and more agencies that have presented to us than just those. But the other side of what we do is advocacy. So I just want to remind board that we have been to your meetings to advocate for the mobile home park ordinances. We have been to the city planning and board joint meeting to argue for the continuation of senior shuttle funding. The commission has expressed their outrage about the cuts to adult protective services, the long-term care ombudsman program cuts. We have written to the governor, and we've contributed our viewpoint to the Tribune in December of 2008. Dr. Charles Carlson, who is going to be here with me today to speak, many of you may know, has been an advocate in the community. He's a member of the COA and of the Area Agency on Aging, and he has traveled around this county to present his ideas for making San Luis Obispo an aging-friendly community and pointing out the importance of proactive county planning and development design to address the senior and family concerns that the baby boomer population increase is going to bring to the community very shortly. So the members of the Commission on Aging, volunteers and paid agency staff alike, are dedicated to providing a platform for dialogue and an information base to our county senior population that will ensure their safety and quality of life. This mission is an important contribution to the county's desired community-wide results of a healthy community and a livable community. We seek the continued support of the Board of Supervisors for the efforts and the mission of the San Luis Obispo Commission on Aging. And we also seek interest from the community, community members. Those of you here today, some of you are advocates for things that are going on in the community. And if you're interested in contacting me about membership, I would be very happy to talk to you. My phone number is 235-5779. With that, are there any questions, or is that pretty much?
Thank you, Ms. Bellefontaine. Any questions of Madam Chair of the Commission? Please come back forward. I want to thank you on behalf of my colleagues for the work that the Commission does. It is a remarkable collection of individuals, and I look forward, actually, to your next meeting, which is on Friday, where I'll come. Unfortunately, I think I was listed on the agenda as talking about the state budget, and how I drew that short straw, I don't exactly know, but we'll have to do it. It does your commission. I know from my office, my legislative assistant tracks your activities very closely for me, and I know that you have been a wonderful forum for a wide range of very important issues. And as we look at the baby boom, who is soon to become the senior boom in this part of the world, I think your function is going to become ever more important. You know, we look at issues such as housing and transportation and healthcare, all of these things having particular needs within the senior community. I think it's really important that we do it. I'd like to thank you personally for your advocacy on behalf of the commission. You have brought a lot of energy to it, and we appreciate that very much. And we look forward to seeing what activities you pursue in the future.
Right.
I hope we do take advantage of wide broadcast. I hope it's a wide broadcast of these proceedings. And I wonder if you could casually and slowly give your contact information again, so that anyone who's interested in getting in touch with you might be able to.
Yes, and also I should mention that our meetings are on the third Friday of the month,
right,
and at 10 o'clock at the Veterans Memorial Building.
San Luis Obispo.
And my name is Kathleen Bellefontaine, and my contact number is 235-5779.
All right. Thank you very much.
Appreciate your comment.
All right. Moving on to item B2, we have over a century of combined service to the county to recognize, and I wonder if Ms. Douglas Schatz would enlighten us on that, please.
Hello, Mr. Chair, members of the board. I'm Tammy Douglas Schatz, and with me today is Dory Duke from the Human Resources Department. We are happy to be here to assist the board in your tradition of recognizing employees for their years of public service. Individuals recognized by the board are dedicated employees who serve as an example to others as they contribute on a daily basis to the county's vision of a safe, healthy, livable, prosperous, and well-governed community. We have three people that we'd like to honor today for 35 years of service. And just by way of how we're going to go about this, if when we call your name you could come up and stand and listen to your resolution being read by the board, that would be great so we can honor you. And we'll start with Donna Morris from the Treasurer Tax Collector. Is Donna here?
And it's been my pleasure to take the resolution recognizing Donna L. Morris for 35 years of service to the residents of the County of San Luis Obispo. This resolution reads as follows. Whereas Donna L. Morris, in 1964, at the age of 17, graduated from Arroyo Grande High School and started working for the county as temporary help. And whereas in 1965, Donna was hired to a permanent position in the auditor's office when the financial management system consisted of a bookkeeping machine, paper ledgers, and was staffed by Donna and her supervisor. And whereas in May 1969, Donna transferred to the office of the treasurer, public administrator, public guardian before the tax collector's office was added. Whereas in April of 1973, Donna left full-time employment and continued to work as temporary help. However, in October of 1974, Donna was back as a permanent employee. Whereas in January 1981, Donna was promoted to secretary and assisted with budget preparation and personnel management in a time when spreadsheets were handwritten and the budget prep system was a typewriter. And whereas, now I hear the laughter in the audience. I mean, is that a fond recollection of old times? Or, and whereas the department was one of the first to receive the new invention known as the PC, and Donna quickly demonstrated an aptitude for PC applications. And whereas in August of 1987, due to Donna's skills in systems, problem-solving, and organizing, she was promoted to administrative services officer and has served as office automation manager and treasury manager, during which time she programmed the database system that is still utilized to manage the treasury investment pool. And whereas for the past 13 years, as the assistant department head, Donna's vision of the department's mission to provide quality service has resulted in numerous automated systems, the most significant being taxes on the web, whereby the public can receive up-to-date tax information 24/7, and now the property tax management system where taxpayers can go green with paperless bills. And whereas after 35 years of continuous service to the county, 45 years if you count 10 years of prior service, I think there's going to be some payback here. Donna continues to encourage a philosophy of excellence and pride in the quality of service provided by the employees of Treasurer, Tax Collector, Public Administrator Department. Now, therefore, be it resolved and ordered that the Board of Supervisors of the County of San Luis Obispo, State of California, that Donna L. Morris is hereby commended and thanked for her 35-plus years of dedicated service to the County of San Luis Obispo and its citizens.
We can help her hold the resolution.
There we go.
Thank you.
All right. And Mr. Freitas?
Hang on, Donna.
And Donna, you have rebuttal time. After Mr. Freitas speaks, you'll be given
I want to do two things. One is to thank the board for doing these presentations. I think they are very valuable. We have lots of outstanding employees working for the County of San Luis Obispo, Donna being one of them. And I also would like to thank Donna for her service and that for her help and actually for her making the department as effective as it is. So thank you, Donna.
Donna, you're welcome to offer us any comments that you'd like.
In my defense.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much for the honor, and it has been, it seems like not that long, 45 years, and 17, I really wasn't planning on staying here this long. But it's been a wonderful place to work, and wonderful co-workers and boss, so... Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, we'd like to honor Stephen Boltz of the Sheriff's Department.
Under Sheriff. Don't fight. I've asked Supervisor Shajian to read this resolution.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It gives me quite an honor to read this resolution to Mr. Boltz, honoring Mr. Boltz, Under Sheriff Boltz. But prior to that, I would like to recognize Mrs. Boltz and the two lovely children that are in the audience, and I want to thank you on behalf of my colleagues for sharing your husband and dad with us. Thanks to his commitment to the job, which means on call 24 hours, 7 days, maybe a lot of time away from home, to make our community a safer place and make us feel safe at home. At this time, I would like to ask all men and women from the Sheriff's Department to stand up, please, and I want to thank you as well. With that, Mr. Chair, this resolution honoring Stephen A. Boltz for 35 years of service to the San Luis Obispo County Sheriff's Department. Whereas Stephen Boltz first began service to the citizens of the County of San Luis Obispo as a part-time volunteer reserve deputy sheriff in September 1973. And whereas Steve accepted full-time employment as a deputy sheriff in December of 1974, with various assignments for the next 7 years in the jail, courts, uniform patrol, and special problems unit. And whereas in 1981, Steve was promoted to detective and over the next 6 years held assignments as a criminal and coroner's investigator. And whereas in 1987, Steve was promoted to the position of sergeant and over the 9 years that followed held supervisory assignments in detectives, coroners, coast patrol, and north patrol. And whereas in 1996, Steve was promoted to the position of lieutenant and held assignments at headquarters patrol, detectives, and administration. Whereas, during a departmental reorganization in 2004, Steve was appointed to the position he currently holds, that of undersheriff. And whereas, over the past 35 years, Steve has worked tirelessly on countless criminal cases, programs, and projects, and has often been recognized for outstanding performance and benefit to citizens and visitors of San Luis Obispo County. Now, therefore, be it resolved and ordered that the County of San Luis Obispo, Board of Supervisors, State of California, thus hereby recognize 35 years of outstanding public service provided by Steve Boltz to the residents of our county. Steve, if you come forward and accept it.
See, before you go too far, let's ask your family to come forward. If somebody can borrow that camera and take a picture. There's one more camera going. Do you want us to pose for you as well? Yeah, thanks, Steve. With us, Chairman, is Mr. Reed to say a few words.
Hey. Thank you, Chairman Gibson, members of the board. I'm Rob Reed, Chief Deputy with the Sheriff's Department. On behalf of Sheriff Hedges, I'm here today to present this award to Undersheriff Stephen Boltz. The resolution is very succinct and only hints at the accomplishments and dedication Steve has demonstrated over his 35 years with the department. From his earliest beginning as a reserve deputy to a long history in our detective division and onto his current position, Steve has always put in more work and effort than what was expected. Because of his efforts and at all levels of the department, many who committed crimes in San Luis Obispo County are not able to prey upon our citizens any longer. In order of brevity, I leave you with a genuine thank you to Steve and to his family for their years of dedication.
Good morning, board and staff. I'm Steve Boltz from the Sheriff's Department. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank Human Resources, County Administrative Staff, as well as your board for taking the time and the effort to recognize county employees' public service, I think it's very important that county employees know that they are appreciated. I'd like to thank Cacho particularly. Your pronunciation is getting very good. I started out the day, I presume to be a pretty normal day, and then I heard the resolution, and I'm suddenly very tired, but I'll take a nap and do much better. Most importantly, what I'd like to acknowledge and thank is the many fine men and women at the Sheriff's Department that I work with and I work for, and I mean that sincerely. I do work for them. They make my job so much easier, and it's so easy to come to work with such a fine staff, from our executive staff to my administrative staff and assistants. The uniform folks, both on the street and in the jail, the people that, the men and women that stand between the people and harm's way, and the professional staff that makes the department run and counts all the beans and makes sure all the bills are paid, and I'm just extremely proud of all of those people. I want to acknowledge my family too for putting up with my going to work every day for what seems like only a few years, but when counting it is 35. So I think I've said enough, but thank you all.
Thank you.
And finally, we'd like to honor Chuck Stevenson of the Planning Department.
And I've asked Supervisor Patterson to read Chuck's resolution.
Yes, thank you. I'd ask the members of the Planning Department to stand, but they already are. So they're around the back of the room. And oh, here we go.
There we go.
All right. Thank you. It's quite an honor for me to read this resolution recognizing Chuck Stevenson for 35 years of service to the residents of the County of San Luis Obispo. Chuck has amassed quite a list of accomplishments in those 35 years, so bear with me. Whereas Chuck grew up in the San Fernando Valley and remains to this day a steadfast L.A. Dodger fan. He moved to San Luis Obispo to attend Cal Poly, graduated from Cal Poly in 1974, and began his employment with the County Planning Department. Whereas Chuck successfully progressed through the department's professional development series, being promoted to assistant, associate, senior, and supervising planner, and then to division manager. Whereas, during his professional tenure, Chuck became a member of the American Planning Association, and after completing a rigorous testing process, became a member of the American Institute of Certified Planners in 1986. Whereas Chuck has supervised the public information, current planning, code enforcement, and long-range planning section, and as supervisor of the code enforcement section, Chuck developed the overall program and training practices that are the basis for the code enforcement program today. Whereas, as division manager of long-range planning, Chuck has overseen the preparation of many major planning studies, general plan elements, community design plans, and special projects, including strategic or smart growth principles that were recently adopted into the general plan. Whereas Chuck and employees of the Long Range Planning Division have received recognition for outstanding planning work from the American Planning Association for the Napomo Design and Circulation Plan, the Santa Margarita Design Plan, the West Tef Design Plan, and most recently for the Inclusionary Housing Ordinance. And whereas Chuck has actively sought and obtained state and federal grants for constructing streetscape and other improvements for many communities, including Napomo, Cambria, San Miguel, and Santa Margarita. And whereas Chuck worked with local architects, engineers, and the Workforce Housing Coalition to hold a competition that culminated in the development of free stock plans available to individuals who want to build a secondary dwelling unit as a way to promote more affordable housing opportunities. And whereas Chuck's dedication to planning and to his community are illustrated by his many years of service on the City of San Luis Obispo's Architectural Review Commission and his current position as chairman of the San Luis Obispo City Planning Commission. And whereas Chuck's love for all things automotive, and you can't be from the San Fernando Valley and not love all things automotive, includes his participation in both concours events and races with his restored 1966 Mustang Fastback. Now, therefore, be it resolved and ordered that the County of San Luis Obispo Board of Supervisors does hereby recognize Chuck's creativity and leadership in helping to shape land use to ensure a sustainable and high quality of life for present and future residents of San Luis Obispo County and for 35 years of exemplary public service to the residents of our county.
Bring your family up.
So take a photo of
Chuck.
You
need
a family up in the photo.
Yeah.
Okay.
Where's the fastback? Taking the picture.
Yeah.
There we go. Right. Sorry, the picture. Dodger hat.
Yeah.
Here's to Supervisor Hill.
Ms. Griffin, you're going to...
Are you?
Yeah. Well,
what you got?
I'm Cammie Griffin. I'm with the County Planning Department. And I actually had promised Chuck that I wouldn't rub it in just how long 35 years is. And I honored that. There's only one date in the resolution. But, you know, I got to just give a little indication of what it was like when Chuck started with the department. There was still a typing pool. And if you actually got to have a typewriter near your desk, that was really exciting. Otherwise, you hand-wrote everything and turned it into the typing pool. Smoking was still allowed in the buildings. And computers were the size of rooms, not sitting on your desk. And when Chuck started, he started as a planning aide. And from what I understand, senior staff, if they wanted an aide, which was the lowest life form in the department, they would just yell, "Aide!" And whoever was around would come running and help the senior staff. And Chuck started under Ned Rogaway, and he's one of the few staff members who has worked under all of the planning directors who have served this county. First Ned Rogaway, then Paul Crawford, Alex Hines, and then Vic Holanda. Chuck knows that I call him the planner's planner. I think he's exemplified what you are when you are a professional planner through his years of service. He currently is the division manager of the Long Range Planning Division, and that's the division that's going to develop the plans that are going to lead this county into the future and ensure our high quality of life that we have right now. And I want to personally thank Chuck for all of his years of service with the department.
Mr. Stevenson, as Griffin sort of makes your start there sound like something out of Dickens, you know, I wonder if you'd like to comment on how far you've come.
I would to say that I remember when you had a typewriter, you were lucky to get the little correcting tape with it. That was, that meant you were really rising up. But I would just say thanks, Cammie, and to your board for this recognition. As I stand back and look at 35 years, it does seem like it's gone by fast, and there's been a lot of accomplishments, a lot of victories. But I think mostly what I'm pleased about is really the last couple of years, particularly working personally with your board. It's been terrific, and I look forward to working through a lot of the difficult challenges that we have ahead of us. As we know, we have resource issues, housing issues, ag protection, climate change. All these are tremendous challenges that I really look forward to working with you personally on. So, but I would also like to just say thanks as well to my wife, Shelley, who has put up with, and very, very cordially and politely as I come home from work, "Well, how was your day?" And I know she really doesn't want to know. I learned to talk in sound bites so I don't lose her too quick, but she's been a great support. And I thank my family for being here, too. My son, Gary, his wife, Adrienne, and my granddaughter, Audrey, for being here today. So, but thank you very much for this recognition. And also I would just thank, too, the tremendous staff that you have. We would not have been able to accomplish the awards that we've gotten and the tremendous plans that we've prepared without support of our great staff. So I wanted to acknowledge them as part of that. So thank you.
Thank you. Stand by one. I have Supervisors Hill and Nasrajan with their lights on at this point. Mr. Hill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the great things of these 35-year service awards is it makes me feel even younger with all this mysterious talk of typewriters. I salute Chuck. I've gotten to know him the last couple of years and really find him to be a superb professional, extremely helpful, somebody who I think really is trying to serve the long-term interests of the county, but also in meetings with constituents and people is always trying to solve problems. I finally found one reason not to like him, which is the Dodgers fan. Other than that, he's just been a joy to work with and look forward as well to continue to work with him.
Thanks, Ann.
Mr. Sajjan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Obviously, I'm appreciative of all the members of planning and other departments, but anytime I get a chance to work with someone who appreciates speed, good on my list.
Mr. Stevenson, thank you very much for your service, and on behalf of the board, I'd like to thank all of our folks that we've talked to and about and with today. We greatly appreciate the dedication, and as always, I'm struck by the variety of your contributions and wish you many more happy years with the county. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that brings us to public comment. And while the room clears, I would ask, as always, that we have speaker slips in for all those who would like to comment during public comment. We'd like to have those in as we call the item. The room clear and ask those Mr. Morris and Mr. Hogue if they could close the doors to the lobby so we can have our chambers here again. I'd like to have all slips in for general public comment items not on the agenda. Are there any further coming? Okay. So before we start general public comment, I'd like to turn it over to our County Council, Mr. Warren Jensen, to speak about a report that he's releasing today.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Warren Jensen, County Council. I just wanted to let the public know that I have posted on the Public Works website for the Los Osos Wastewater Project a preliminary analysis of the materials that were submitted between April and May of this year by Lisa Schicker. I have some copies of the preliminary analysis here for anyone in the audience who'd like to pick them up.
And again, you've given a previous verbal description. Would you like to go just briefly through the findings that you have there?
Sure. Basically, I found that based on the limited review that I was able to do, in other words, I didn't review all of the documents, there are over 1,300 pages, of the part that I've gotten through, which included the April submissions, plus some of the materials submitted after that, I found that there was no conflict of interest proven for Paavo Ogren, that there was no illegal contract proven between the Los Osos CSD and Montgomery Watson Arza, that there was no negative inference that would justify based on the pendency of investigations that were referenced in Ms. Schicker's materials. No negative inferences are justifiable based on the Cape Coral situation. No negative inferences are justifiable based on the Montgomery Watson Harza filing of a bankruptcy claim or the other litigation against the district, which remains unresolved, and that no other negative inferences were warranted.
All right. And this will be posted to the Public Works Los Osos Wastewater Project website later today, I understand.
Yes.
All right. Thank you very much. So we'll move to public comment. I'd like to ask by a show of hands those who would like to comment on the Los Osos project. I have four slips that appeared, so that would be fine. We'll go 2 minutes apiece, starting with Ben DeFatta. All right, so Mr. Fatta, you're pulling your slip. All right, then it's 3 minutes apiece. Lindy Owen, followed by Piper Riley.
Good morning. Sorry to take a minute to get up here. I just wanted to say that I missed a whole week of politics in Los Osos and the county, and it was just delightful to get away and go up to Monterey where things seem a little bit more stable. I'm glad that Mr. Warren was able to give us an update. Since we just got it, I haven't had a chance to even see what he wrote, but I wonder if he's also investigating the National Water Research Institute donations from Montgomery Watson Harza. Carollo and Associates also made donations to them. This is the peer review group that's looking over the wastewater project. So, again, when friends are donating to friends and you're asking us to trust a process, I would like him to please report back to let us know how much he feels that that may have influenced the National Water Research Institute's decision to not evaluate STEP. I come back to the fact that Mr. Gibson's strong support for Paavo Ogren's staff and their $7 million expenditure has just continued to eliminate the design-build comparison for any viable alternatives. It was promised that there would be a fair and competitive comparison of collection and treatment technologies and a price. The most important thing for our community is how much will it cost. If we have choices, we would like to know which those choices are. If you take the competitive process away, we don't have a choice. We don't have any way to look at prices. I believe that the STEP technology with ponding, which produces no sludge, will come in at about half of the price of the gravity sewer. But we'll never know if we don't get a competitive process. And it's up to you to put that back into the CEQA process, which has been broken. I think there's been a hostile environment for the bidders. People that wanted to come on board and put out technologies and get involved, it was too hostile. They turned and left. They were rejected over and over again through any steps in the process. And it's been completely biased, and we can fix that in the future. And in your decision, as you look at the Planning Commission findings and what their suggestions are, please put the step design and the ponding system back in to the decision-making so we can see what that cost is and what kind of energy and footprint that kind of technology will make. It's what we've been waiting for 10 years, and we've been promised over and over and over again. And now it's up to you to bring that back to us and make a fair process. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Owen. Ms. Riley, followed by Al Barrow.
Good morning, Board. I'm Piper Riley from Los Osos.
Last Tuesday, I attended a Coastal Commission hearing on making the process more efficient. It cost $80,000 to put on a three-hour discussion with local government officials, which got sidetracked from the topic of efficiency early on and became more of a feel-good session. It was a perfect example of why our government does not work as well as it should. This past Thursday, the Planning Commission had its final meeting on the LOWWP. Mr. Meacham's appointee basically deferred his vote to Mr. Supervisor Gibson's appointee, who was not there on the final day. Supervisor Gibson's appointee's only argument for why STEP wouldn't work was that it would rip up people's yards. But she ignored the fact that when we take all those septics offline, or as our district engineer has already stated, Los Osos will look very different. Once people start seeing their yards die, they will water, defeating any conservation measures. This same sort of backwards thinking permeates the LOWWP. An unsealed gravity collection system with an inadequate slope to achieve scouring speed, requiring water for flushing and hazardous chemicals to mask the stench of stagnant waste emanating out of some 900 manholes. Then, use of a high-energy treatment system which perpetuates the sludge problem that gravity collection begins. Disposal instead of reuse. To add insult to injury, this big mess will exacerbate our seawater intrusion problems to the point where our aquifers may be completely destroyed. And it comes with the biggest price tag, too. Between the Coastal Commission, Dave Congleton Show, and the recent LOCAC meeting, Supervisor Gibson has given different information regarding the Los Osos Basin each time, yet ultimately concludes that it'll be all okay. However, this does not jive with the conclusions drawn by our district engineer. On the contrary, and as many of us have said for quite some time, the situation is alarming. Los Osos deserves to at least get a postcard informing residents of the dire status of our drinking water, not because of nitrates, which are averaging at about drinking water standards, but regarding seawater intrusion. How can people participate in fixing a problem when they don't even know it exists? Our level 3 water severity could quickly become a catastrophe, and we deserve full disclosure. Up until 10 years ago, the county was responsible for the Los Osos water basin, and they have known about the seawater intrusion for decades. AB 2701 clearly gives the county control to fix the problem, which through their own mismanagement, including the permitting of over 1,100 homes during a building moratorium, was created. This is not something that can wait or that someone else can do. People's rights and the environment are at stake here, and it's time for the county to step up. Pun was meant. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Riley. Mr. Barrow, last commenter on the Los Osos Wastewater Project.
Good afternoon. My name is Alfred Barrow, Coalition for Low Income Housing and Citizens for Affordable and Safe Environment. The interests I have are for the 50% of the community who's on the lower income side of Los Osos, and the impacts that it will have to their ability to survive, to pay their mortgages, to put food on the table, to pay their insurances, which have already become extremely difficult for the low-income sector of our county and Los Osos. And to that end, I just wanted to say that you have chosen the most expensive sewer option that was on the table. And anyone who tells you that STEP STAG is anywhere close to the cost of gravity is sadly misinformed. And I spoke with the engineers yesterday morning at 6 o'clock, and they told me probably in the range of 50 to 60 million would be the conceivable low end of the cost of the STEP STAG project, the high end being 90. The cost of the gravity system, on the other hand, is listed in your reports as $165 million, that program. Now, that includes the whole project, but nevertheless, $80 million for the RFP, change orders, $10 million for the on-lot costs, which are not included in that estimate. And by the way, the on-lot costs are included in the STEP cost. It's a huge difference. But aside from the cost, we have a stack of impacts. The Planning Commission just created their findings, 170 pages of findings to justify the impacts of this project. The prior record for a finding in this county was 60 pages. Think about that. There are so many problems that have to be mitigated in the Gravity Project. And I think more will show up. It's just incredible. And I'd like to point out to you that you did promise the people of Los Osos, when you asked them to assess themselves, that they would get a fair evaluation, a co-equal analysis. And I quote to you, this is the assessment engineer's comment from the county. In the current project selection strategy, the step and gravity alternatives would be complete through the construction bidding phase using a competitive bid, design build, or a build, own, operate, transfer process. That's the record. And in closing, I'd like to say the Los Osos Legal Defense Fund has opened up their bank account and has been accepting donations for our attorneys, and we do have two attorneys to represent us.
Thank you, Mr. Barrow. Bob Blair, followed by Eric Greening. Eric, if you're ready, please, Mr. Greening, come forward, and we'll get the overhead going.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and it's always good to honor people who've been here a while, and it's interesting, we had the conversation about typewriters. I remember, too, like, remember carbon paper? I mean, it is absolutely amazing how much has changed. It's also amazing what hasn't changed during the last 35 years or even the last 50 years. We still have a transportation system built around the single-occupant automobile, roads and autos on those roads. You think of just the difference in efficiency in terms of getting things done in an office and the lack of difference in terms of getting around on the land, even though there have been models for things like these pod cars running on monorails. They actually do that in Morgantown, West Virginia, have for decades, but it's hard to get outside that box somehow when it comes to transportation. And I don't know why, but there's been a lot of work in the last 35 years to put in an infrastructure for pedestrians and bicyclists, and it's very welcome. And Mr. Stevenson certainly has more than his share in terms of some of those accomplishments, but it has been offset by so much auto-centered sprawl going on and on into the outlying areas. I wanted to bring this up now because we are rolling into the time when school is starting, and people who drive need to be prepared to see a lot of young non-drivers in numbers in places where they're not used to seeing them. And I would strongly urge everyone who drives to take extra caution and be extra vigilant. It should be safe to be a kid. It should be safe to be a non-driver. And in that connection, I just want to hope that our climate action plan finds a way to build something locally on the very inadequate and temporary safe routes to school funding we get from outside. That's basically federal money, which is tenuous, coming through a state process, which is tenuous, and currently it's only been extended through the end of 2012, and the amounts are fairly tiny compared to the need. But I'm hoping that now that we've identified that transportation is at the root of over two-thirds of our emissions in this county, that we would find a way through the Climate Action Plan to have a far more robust effort. And I'm hoping that each of you will take the time to walk or bicycle in some of these places where kids are soon going to be and assess the safety for yourselves. There are some pretty scary places that kids will be navigating, and I hope we all take account. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. And it appears, Mr. Blair, you're going to continue on the multimodal transportation discussion.
Right.
Mr. Blair.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen. What you see before you is probably a poor picture, but that is last Saturday. That is the V&T Railroad in Virginia City. They are making their maiden voyage from Carson City to Virginia City, the first time since 1938. This is welcome all of you to come over there and ride the train. I haven't been here for a while because most of what I'm doing lately is restoring my antique cars and taking care of my business at Adventures in Nevada. What I really want to talk about is if we had something like the Santa Margarita Ranch in Nevada, we certainly wouldn't be trying to stop them having events or slow their train down. It's come to me that some people said they want the people in Santa Margarita Ranch to curtail the use of the Disneyland train. As a train buff who would drive 1,000 miles to ride one of those things, I think that's a travesty. The other two things I want to comment on are related. One is the brush poppers, and the other is the rec center in the poem, both of which were kind of derailed by the school district. Brush poppers, my daughter was involved in. She, I think, won the all-around 1 year, runner-up a couple other years. This builds quality, character, fortitude, self-reliance in young women and men. It should be continued. The $7,500 that you want to charge them in fees is ridiculous. You talk about young people and doing things for young people. That's what the brush popper should go forward without anything, because families are going to have to pony up a little extra money for each event to cover the $7,500. My daughter also went on to get 2 master's degrees and a 4-year business degree from Cal Poly, so I know that that builds character in young individuals. The other thing is the rec center in the poem. There again, the school district come in and through a, not necessarily their fault, but misappropriation, bad management, the community in Napomo lost the rec center. And the school district was going to make some quick profit on real estate. Well, we all know what folly that was, and look what we've got. I think somebody needs to go in there and put that rec center back into the public's hands. I don't think you need a shopping center there. There's plenty of other room for shopping centers. You don't have any other viable alternatives for a rec center, and I think that should happen. The third and fourth thing is, I'm glad to see that 101 is finally losing its third world status as a road in California. The unfortunate thing is that the materials that are being used, Coast Rock and Union Asphalt about 2 years ago, was sold to the Japanese. So all that money that's funneling through for products and concrete and asphalt is not staying in this county and is going overseas. That is because of something called AB 32. We've had, okay, but AB 32 is going to cost you a lot of money.
Thank you, Mr. Blair. That concludes our public comment. Items not on the agenda.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Meacham.
If I might, please, I wanted to comment briefly. Obviously, they have left, but Ms. Riley's comment referencing the fact that my appointed planning commissioner deferred the decision to the district planning commissioner. I'd like to correct that. That is not true. What he did was, under discussion, was a specific project. That determination was made by the planning commission. The public wanted to know why they couldn't have further discussion for an alternative portion of a system like the Step Stag. He mentioned to the district planning commissioner that she had the pulse of that community much better than he. And if the community wanted and so desired to do that, they had the ability to petition the board. It wasn't a deferral of the decision. So I wanted to make that clarification.
Thank you for that, Mr. Meacham. With that, we'll continue our business with our first hearing item. Madam Clerk, if you'd introduce that for us, please.
C1 is a hearing to consider an appeal by Marilyn Farmer of the Planning Commission's approval of Conditional Use Permit DRC 2007-00135, Sanjay Gampule, for the construction of a 24,800-square-foot medical office, parking area, landscaping, and associated improvements, located at 1310 Los Tablas in Templeton, 1st District. It's recommended denial of the appeal.
Thank you. Mr. Ho.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Warren Ho, Department of Planning and Building. I would like to introduce Holly Phipps, the project manager on this application, and she will make a presentation on the appeal
for you. All right. Thank you. Ms. Phipps, when you're ready.
Mr. Chairman, just for the record, if I could, please, I handed out to everyone all the correspondence that I'd received from the farmers. I did have an ex parte meeting with them in my office to discuss this issue.
Okay. Thank you. And while Ms. Phipps gets ready, are you ready to go? We'll carry on.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board, Holly Phipps, planning staff. On February 11, 2009, the Planning Commission heard and approved a proposal by Mr. Sanjay Ganpalay for a conditional use permit to allow for the construction of an approximately 24,000 square foot medical facility with associated improvements. Before you today is, could we have on screen? Thank you. Before you today is an appeal filed by Mrs. Farmer of the Planning Commission's decision. The proposed project is located on the north side of Las Tablas Road. It is located approximately 75 east of Mockingbird Lane and approximately 1,500 feet west of Twin Cities Hospital. The proposed project is located in the office professional land use category and it is located within the community of Templeton. The proposed project is also located in the Salinas River planning area. Here we have a look at the site plan and the parking lot. You can see here is kind of the dark area. Here is the proposed building and the western property line. The appellant objects to the location of the proposed building. Instead, the appellant would prefer to have the parking lot directly adjacent to the property lines to the west instead of a two-story building. As you can see from the topography, the proposed project site is a little bit lower than the residential development to the west. There is a 20-foot setback from the proposed building to the western property line. As per the conditions, a sound attenuation wall and landscaping shall be installed to act as a buffer from the non-residential development. At the Planning Commission, Condition 4 was modified so that the proposed landscaping trees would be a minimum of 15 gallons with the goal of full screening within 5 years. The appellant is also concerned that the project as proposed and sited will have a negative sound impact on adjacent neighbors. The Planning Commission addressed this concern by adding an additional noise mitigation to Condition 8, which would include using the most sound-efficient units available and that the proposed units be fully screened for sound that would include a secondary sound wall protection around the HVAC systems on top. The appellant is concerned that asbestos exposure may result in health concerns during the construction phase of the project. Condition 15 requires testing for the presence of asbestos, and if found, the applicant must comply with the requirements outlined in asbestos toxic control measures, which will be overseen by APCD. If asbestos is found on site, Condition 15 was modified to include the following. The applicant shall notify the residents within 300 feet in consultation with APCD. With that, staff is recommending adoption of a resolution affirming the Planning Commission's decision and conditionally approving the conditional use permit DRC 2007-00135 based on the findings in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B. And staff is available for questions.
Thank you. Bring it back to questions from my colleagues, starting with the supervisor of the district. And Mr. Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Phipps, dealing with the appeal issue that Ms. Farmer and her neighbors have brought forth, they had reached some sort of tentative agreement with Mr. Ganpalay on 7 conditions that would total about $12,000, and it seems that the condition that Mr. Ganpalay had was that he would agree to that, except that that they would have to withdraw an appeal. So I guess my question is it how else would they get those conditions met without an appeal? I mean, it seems like the appeal process is the only way for those things to be conditioned as part of approval of this project, but
I'll jump in. Karen Nall with the Planning Division. You're correct. To make it part of the conditions, it needs to be added at this at an appeal hearing.
So there really wasn't any other way for them to accomplish.
It would be a civil agreement between the two parties.
Okay. Thank you. That's all for now.
All right. Seeing no other questions, we'll open it to the public. And since we are in an appeal, the format goes like this. We'll give the appellants 10 minutes, up to 10 minutes, to present information they think is relevant. We'll then have 10 minutes for the applicant. We'll open it to any other members of the public that wish to speak, and if we need to, we can come back with five-minute closing remarks from the applicant and then 5 minutes from the appellant. So with that, Ms. Farmer or Mr. Farmer, you'd like to give us your name for the record, and we'll go from there.
I'm Todd Farmer. I am a co-owner and resident of 185 Mockingbird Lane, which is adjacent to the proposed project site. I'm also here with my mother, Marilyn Farmer, who is a co-owner as well, and we collectively represent the neighbors of South Mockingbird Lane, five residents, which directly are adjacent to the proposed property, or to the proposed project. In addition to those five directly affected properties, we have circulated an appeal and have collected signatures from 18 other residences in the affected neighborhood supporting our position that we would have preferred to have the project modified, reoriented so that the 20-foot, so the building was set back further and the parking lot would be adjacent to the properties. The community finds that to be much less obtrusive. There was some discussion about this during the Planning Commission meeting, and there were some differences of opinions among the commissioners. However, it is a consensus among those that we have contacted in the community that a parking lot is far preferable. Most of those folks are not here today because they can't afford to take a day off of work to come and have that. And obviously, the privacy mitigation, the privacy aspect affects four or five residences directly. Those that are further down the road aren't going to be affected by a 34-foot tall building that's set back just 20 feet from their property line. We're asking the board to take two actions. It has been noted already that the applicants, or Dr. Gampelet and the residents have met and come to a tentative agreement on seven mitigation measures that would make this project as it exists right now acceptable to the residents. We have, I believe we have that on, I'm sorry, okay, great. See it yet.
That looks like the computer. Where are we looking for the overhead?
We can do overhead. It's further down. You want to do the overhead?
Down by step.
And which one are you wanting?
The mitigation measures signed by Dr. Gampelet. Actually, can we put the petition on first, just to. This is a community petition signed by 18 residents of Mockingbird and adjacent streets supporting the position that we're taking today. These are the mitigation measures, and I'll talk through them in some detail in just a moment. One of the things that's important to note is that Dr. Gampelet's signature is found on the bottom here. And as noted by Supervisor Hill, one of the conditions that was added to this by Dr. Gampelet was that we remove the, or we discontinue the appeals process. After consultation with county staff, we received the same answer that Supervisor Hill received, which is that this was the only mechanism to formally adopt these conditions into the conditional use permit. And given that Dr. Gampelet is being a developer here and his representatives have communicated to us the possibility that he would sell the property without actually developing it, and that these development rights would therefore transfer to the purchaser of the property, we thought it was in the community residents' best interest to incorporate them formally into the conditional use permits rather than rely on a good faith agreement directly with Dr. Gampley, which would neither be enforceable nor transferable should the property be transferred to another developer. As you can see, Dr. Gampley has signed that. This is noted in the staff report. One of the things omitted, unfortunately, from the staff report was that the concerned residents actually signed and returned a counterproposal to Dr. Gampley. It has been signed. It is exactly the same conditions, with the exception of the dispensation of this appeal. And let's see if I can read that particular portion of it. In the original appeal, which Dr. Gampley, or original agreement which Dr. Gampley signed, he says, owner hereby agrees to these project modifications with the understanding that any and all appeals to the Board of Supervisors will be withdrawn 4 weeks prior to the hearing date. This was changed in the counterproposal to owner hereby agrees to these project modifications and their formalization into the conditional use permit with the understanding that the concerned neighbors will pursue no additional modifications to the project beyond the scope of this agreement. As noted, we signed this agreement and sent it to Dr. Gampley's representatives. It has not been signed, and as best we are told, it has been rejected. I have contacted Dr. Gampley. I attempted to contact Dr. Gampley directly this week to see if there was any chance that we could come before you and not waste your time and our time with this appeal and jointly offer up these mitigation measures as something that could resolve this conflict. And interestingly enough, the information I got back, the message I got back was that Dr. Gampley was unaware of this entire process. So I'm not sure exactly who we're dealing with in terms of whether we're working with Dr. Gampley or Dr. Gampley's representatives, but Dr. Gampley's message to me was that he was uninvolved. He delegates this all to Rob Carnes, and he was unaware that this appeals was going forward. The second thing that we would ask the board to consider is notifying, increasing the effectiveness of TAG and advisory groups by notifying affected residents of hearings. This project gained momentum and in the TAG process went through multiple cycles and multiple reviews. In fact, according to the developer, it actually had an initial plan which flipped the orientation in such a way that the community would have found favorable, but this was rejected by TAG. Unfortunately, we have no understanding of the reasons why we weren't involved in the discussions, and now we're only involved at the Planning Commission when this project has reached a significant amount of momentum. Just walking through the mitigation measures very quickly, there are seven things. As noted, the overall cost of the project is $12,000. In the context of this type of a development, that is relatively small. The first is we've asked them to frost the windows. It was noted several times during the County Planning Commission meeting that the windows in medical offices are not meant for views, as tenants will have privacy concerns of their own. The windows are required for natural light, and frosting the windows facing the residents provides for both privacy and lighting concerns at minimal cost. We ask that they raise the window sill height to 5'6", serving to restrict sight lines into the backyards of concerned residences, and this was deemed to have no cost impact. We ask that there be a landscape buffer. It's already present in the proposed site design. This measure formally would define acceptable use for the 20-foot landscape buffer to prevent pathways or picnic areas. This also has no cost impact. We ask for fencing of this buffer area in order to prevent the buffer area from being used as a footpath and to prevent access to the limited visibility area off hours. This provides both privacy and security benefits to both the applicant and residents at minimal cost, about $1,000 estimated by the developer. We ask for reduced exterior lighting in order to prevent light pollution. Lighting on the west face of the building would be limited to low-level landscape lighting. This has no associated cost increase and could well decrease operating costs for the applicant. We asked for increased density of trees. This would provide more effective visual screening between the proposed building and the residences. The cost is $2,000. Finally, we asked for coordination on the construction of the sound attenuating fence. And this was simply to ensure that the fence, if it's built on the grade, is built at such a point where it will be an effective sound barrier rather than at the bottom where everything will pass right over up the grade to the residences. The mitigation measures have been agreed to as ways to remedy the privacy, noise, and health issues that are created by this proposed development and have been deemed by the neighboring and directly affected residents to be detrimental to the health, safety, and welfare of the general public, the adjacent neighbors, and have already proven injurious to the neighboring property values and worth. And that's in relation to Exhibit A.
All right.
The staff report.
Mr. Farmer, we'll come back. We have actually a couple questions, a question here, sure. One light on. Again, Mr. Meacham, would you like to lead off here?
Thank you. Yes, I did. Mr. Farmer, the number of residents that are adjacent to this construction project are
five.
And TAG's recommendation, if I understand correctly, the original proposal was a shift of the building, kind of a flip-flop, if you will, and there was no objection by the applicant at that point. Is that correct?
Unfortunately, because this was done in TAG and we weren't part of that, the only information we have is from the applicant himself, so the applicant would be better suited to answer those questions.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure.
And then that was the only ones I have for now. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Farmer, the picture you have up currently showing the fence, it was condition number 7 on your list, and a previous diagram actually shows the actual property line down slope a little bit, I believe. It's
fence is constructed on the property line. There are different orientations for each neighbor. As you can see, the neighboring house is pushed back a little bit from the property line,
mm-hmm.
But that particular fence is directly on the property
okay,
line.
Okay, are you suggesting that these fences be just repaired as opposed to a new fence constructed?
That was our suggestion. Obviously, there could be legal or logistical problems with doing so based on whose property the fence resides on. Our primary concern is that the fence be effective. If you put a fence at the bottom of that, a 6-foot fence isn't going to get up. It'll barely get up above the bottom of the property line and will have very little, if any, impact on sound attenuation. So I think that there are other ways to remedy it other than a difficult legal and logistical problem of having a single fence, but that was the original proposal and what Dr. Gamplay agreed to, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Farmer. We'll go now to the applicant or applicant's agent for a 10-minute segment.
Morning. My name is Pat Blody. I'm an architect with RM Design Group representing Dr. Gamplay. I was involved with the initial design process, and I wanted to address that question regarding site planning from Supervisor Meacham, and during the TAG process, there was, of course, a lot of sensitivity anytime you put a commercial building next to residential. So we brought to TAG a couple different site plan options. Their preferred option is the one that you see in front of you, and the reasons behind that, there's more than one reason. The first reason is they have a 3-building campus that has no identifiable vehicle entry right now. The placement of the building where you see it now creates an obvious entry point, and it reduces what you see currently in that neighborhood is first-time visitors driving around looking for the proper place to enter the site. That was the first reason. The second reason was more of a consensus about quality of life, and through discussions at TAG and also at Planning Commission, the consensus was, as a neighbor, most people would prefer to have a building which is controllable as opposed to a parking lot which has a lot of sound issues, light issues, and other things. So just wanted to reassure the board here that there was a lot of thought that went into the building placement. The mitigations that were added during Planning Commission included additional visual screening for landscaping. It included additional noise mitigation for the roof-mounted equipment, and as you can see from the graphics that were posted up there, the section shows an increased building setback from the required 10 to 20 feet. So those are the design issues I wanted to share. Also, Rob Parnes is an owner representative, and he can shed some light on the negotiation process with the citizens. Thank you.
Good morning, Board. My name is Robert Carnes. I am Dr. Gamplay's representative. He is aware of the project. He's aware of the hearing taking place. However, he runs a very large practice, and he tries to focus on his oncology practice, and I try to focus on his buildings. As Pat was saying, we did get a 5-0 vote from TAG. We did present options to TAG. Those options were reviewed at length, and then we proposed the option that was chosen for our submittal to you. The conditions that were provided by the appellant, we were agreeable to those conditions. We just felt that with Dr. Gamplay's reputation in the community that we could agree to that without coming back to the Planning Commission, recognizing that signing the agreement as it was, we would end up here anyhow. And with the mitigations that we had already provided in the Planning Commission hearing, we felt that we had done what we needed to do for the project. We are still willing to discuss with them issues and so on and so forth. I'm not adamantly against incorporating those conditions. I just felt that they were really not acting in good faith with us, and that Dr. Gamplay's reputation in the community is huge, and that agreeing to that we would do it was adequate. This project may or may not be built, and the property may or may not be sold, and I also didn't want to encumber the project with conditions that were made by Dr. Gamplay that were really more onerous than not. So that's kind of our conclusion. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Again, thank Supervisor Meacham.
Mr. Kearns, in regard to the 5-0 vote from TAG and also from the Planning Commission, were the property owners advised of the project? Were they there?
At the TAG meeting, we were not responsible for notification, and there were some property people there. I don't know if they were specifically neighbors for that project. There were some comments made definitely by the TAG group. I think a couple of audience people spoke as well, but those meetings are usually pretty small. They're in their community center there. It's pretty informal process.
And the typical hours of operation, this isn't a night operation?
No, this is a medical office building. The building will probably be open somewhere from 7:30 in the morning until 5:36 at night at the latest. Most of the systems within the buildings, they all now have lighting control systems, so the lighting is generally shut off somewhere between 7 and 8. If we build this building, we will be leasing it out, but all the systems within the building will meet all current building codes, and therefore those systems have automatic shutdowns and so on and so forth. So I wouldn't anticipate that there's a lot of lighting on within the offices and so on and so forth. That's their cost.
Well, I guess I'm going more to the point of the parking issue. If it's a daytime operation, then the traffic that's coming and going wouldn't be so intrusive based upon the hours of operation as opposed to a nighttime.
Well, there's two significant issues with changing the building organization. One is this is a group parking area, so that would move the parking to the back of the building, which would disallow the use by the other portions of the existing building. We currently have, on a daily basis, probably 30 to 40 cars that are parked even in the dirt lot because it's closer to the surgery center and to their back entrance. So this is really, it's not a single building on a single site, and it also is on a one-acre lot, so that building is not like it's part of a large campus. I mean, it is part of an overall campus, but it's on its own lot and has its own setback issues with that lot line as well. So we would lose some very critical square footage. We would lose the campus connection. We've actually been talking to a tenant that's very interested in working with Raslo for the building, and if that were to come to fruition, then we really need that shared parking area between the two facilities and a pathway between those two facilities. And this organization of the building works very well for the campus situation. Also, there is a significant issue with people being able to find us. The way the building is organized, the big building, it takes the whole corner. The logical entrance is off of Celestial Way. There is this entrance off of Los Tablas, but it's very easily missed. People don't understand it. So this allowed us an ability to really put an official entrance to the site there that would allow people to find it, find their way into the buildings better. And that was one of TAG's main issues, was this accessibility and actually having entrance, where if we flipped the building, we would probably have to eliminate that driveway, create another driveway, and cause more harm to the public right-of-way and more cost to the project, where we have an existing approach and be able to utilize that better.
But when this was proposed to TAG, were there options? Or
yes.
It could be one side or the other.
Yes.
So
we,
these issues that you comment on, they were covered based upon either the being positioned in one way or the other.
No. When we presented to TAG, we had some different building configurations, and we focused on this entrance as being what we wanted, the one that we have now, because it is there, and we can enhance that entrance. When we move it further down the street, if we were, and we would have to eliminate that, probably the engineering department would make us do that. Then all we do is we shove what becomes the truly main entrance to the building even further away, even confusing people more. So then you would force the celestial entrance and this far entrance to our far property line, as opposed to having this kind of central location.
Thank you. Mr. Hill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can get back to the seven conditions that the neighbors were asking for, and that... how am I saying the name correctly? I don't want
to... Dr. Gampelet.
Okay, I apologize.
That's all right.
Dr. Gampelet, that basically you're okay with it, but your main contention is that the neighbor should have just accepted it based on his reputation?
Yes, and we didn't want to encumber... Actually, I have to apologize. I think I either saw an email from them with this letter in it, and when I read it, I thought that they wanted to encumber the title to the property as opposed to add it to the Planning Commission information, which we definitely did not want to do. The title of the property, we want to remain clear. But yes, his reputation in the community is huge. He's known throughout the county, and we just felt that this agreement being between the parties pertaining to the specific project was going to be adequate.
Be that as it may, I'm not sure that would be a recommended business practice on anything, just to sort of go on reputation. It seems if there was an agreement on his part that, the modifications were reasonable, weren't very costly, weren't going to encumber the title, and that the only real way that the neighbors had to guarantee that this would in fact be part of it was to come here and appeal and have it conditioned, I'm not really sure why we're... I mean, it seems like that this should just be agreed to.
I don't have a problem with that now, reading through the letter, that if those conditions want to be added. I apologize, actually. I either misunderstood the information or misread it when I read their rebuttal. We didn't have a problem at that point in time.
Great.
If they had agreed to it, we would have agreed to it, and that was that.
So. All right. Well, it sounds like we're on the verge of something here. Let me open it to other members of the general public. I have no request to speak and see no one coming forward. It would be typical for us to then allow the applicant 5 minutes of closing remarks and followed by the appellant. I don't know if the appellant has... If you have anything, Mr. Carnes... Mr. Farmer, anything in closing here? I think we've got the information on the record, so I'll close it to the public at this point, bring it back to the board. Mr. Shajin, you had your light on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick question for staff, if I may. If the construction moves forward and approved, can a future person who will purchase this, if and when, would the use be changed under the same zoning, can be changed under the same zoning from office building to something of other nature that will extend the hours or needs of operation?
Karen Hall, planning staff, it's office and professional zoning, so any other uses allowed
within
in that zoning.
I'm assuming the hours we heard about from 7:30 to 5:30, 6 or 7, is for what it's meant to be. It's not a condition on the project. Any other user of the site can operate longer hours or...
Correct, but in my opinion, in this highly valuable office and professional neighborhood of Templeton, we will probably see similar medical offices in this location.
Thank you. All right. Mr. Meacham, would you like to lead us forward here?
I would, sir. And if I understand correctly, we have no disagreement here in terms of the conditions that are going to be applied. Okay, so we can incorporate these conditions. So I would make a motion that we adopt the decision of the Planning Commission and conditionally approve the conditional use permit DRC 2007-00135 based on the findings on Exhibit A and incorporating the conditions.
Second. So let's clarify that. Just briefly, we have Mr. Meacham and Mr. Ashajian, or Mr. Hill, on the second. Mr. Hill on the second. As is traditional in here, this would be a motion to either partially deny or partially uphold. So let's partially deny the appeal. I don't know. It doesn't make any difference. But
ask staff or legal counsel, how do we progress with this to incorporate the conditions based upon the appeal that's been made?
Well, I, Jim Orton from County Council's office, I think you could change the resolution to have it say modify the decision of the Planning Commission, and you do that in the title and then the whereas clause before the now therefore one, and then in the paragraph number five, change the word affirmed to modified, and then add these conditions to the conditions of approval, and that should take care of it.
Good, that's what I said, right?
So just incorporate the conditions into the...
I see staff drawing a breath here, so...
If I might just make it clear for the record. What you would do on page C-118, you would add new condition 30 through 37, I guess.
Actually, Warren, can I jump in? We kind of have a better idea, if you would allow Karen Hall with planning staff. We had proposed to add a new condition 4. At the time of application for construction permits, the applicant shall submit a revised site plan and floor plans to incorporate the following. And number 1 on the agreement list, number 2, number 3, number 4, we would read those. I don't know if you want me to read those into the record. Does everyone follow what we're doing here?
Those are the ones on page C-1104.
So the items on C-1104 are incorporated in a new condition 4.
The first 4.
The first 5.
5.
And then in the renumbered number, which would be 5 now, old condition 4 is now going to be 5. D, we are going to add a second sentence to that one. At the time of construction, owner representatives shall coordinate with adjacent residents. So I'm rereading number 7.
On the call of the proposed project modifications.
Okay. And then we propose to add a new F, which will incorporate number 6, increased density of trees.
All right, so let's clarify again, clarify the motion. We have there's a motion to modify the Planning Commission decision. We won't speak about the appeal. Modify the Planning Commission decision, add a new condition 4 that includes items 1 through 5 of the proposed project modifications of page C-1104, renumber conditions on the renumbered condition 5, we will modify D to accommodate number 7, and we'll add F to accommodate number 6. And if the motion maker and the second are clear with that maneuvering?
Yes.
Good. I would only ask, are we clear what baseline we go from to increase the density of trees? And that will be a staff condition compliance issue. So it's to the satisfaction of staff that we increase the density of trees.
Then the only other question I have, if this were to be sold, for example, and a different project came in or whatever the case may be, these conditions go with this particular application.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
All right, if we're clear on the motion and seeing no other questions? Madam Clerk, a roll call, please.
Mr. Meacham?
Aye.
Mr. Stajian?
Aye.
Or, was it Hill? It was Hill.
Mr. Hill. Yes.
Mr. Stajian?
I can vote twice. Yes.
Wait a minute.
Mr. Patterson and Mr. Gibson?
Yes. All right, thank you. With that, we'll take a break and convene at 11:05. Thank you, Madam Clerk. If you would please introduce our next hearing item.
Next item is C2, a hearing to consider an appeal by David Henry of the Planning Commission's approval of a lot line adjustment, COAL 08-055, Golden Land LLC, Wendell Gutter, Nacimiento Planning Area, 1st District. It's recommended denial of the appeal.
All right, thank you. Mr. Jansen, anything to intro before we turn it over here?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the board, Matt Jansen, planning staff. We have received a request for continuance on this item from the appellant's representative. And although staff is here and ready to go, we're not opposed to a continuance. And if you are leaning in that direction, we would recommend at least 3 months, if not 4 months, to give us time to evaluate several issues.
All right.
That's it.
Would my colleagues like to entertain the question of the continuance? We will open this, because it is a public hearing, we will open it to the public.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, I'd like to ask legal counsel if I could. I know that they're one of the key ingredients of this discussion is referencing the legality of a easement. And I've got conflicting letters from Monterey County regarding that. So I'm not sure where legal counsel is in this, weighing in on this request for continuance based upon their questions in this letter.
Well, I'm Jim Orton from County Counsel's office. I've reviewed the letter of August 17, 2009 that was submitted by the appellant's attorney, Mr. Bridges, and he's raised a number of issues there. Over and beyond the issue of the easement, I had been asked previously, and I had seen the letter from Monterey County Council's office, and I'd been asked by planning staff whether or not there would be considered access to the property, and I had advised them that they could proceed, but if you need more time to address these issues and look at them further, and also to further investigate the environmental, the CAT exempt that's been prepared for the project, I suggest going to staff's recommendation. But I don't know if the applicant is here and whether they have any objection to the continuance. You may want to inquire about that.
Well, let me do this. What we will do is... how long a staff report did you have, Ms. Noll?
Roughly 5 minutes.
Why don't we go ahead and take the staff report. We'll go ahead and take public comment, and Mr. Meacham, we can decide after that. If you would.
Karen Noll with Planning Division. The site is located just immediately south of the Monterey County line, just east of the lakes. It's zoned rural lands. It's also adjacent to Camp Roberts, also to the east. Here's an aerial of the site. This is a map of the proposed lot line adjustment, just to go through what they're proposing to do. The yellow box explains the existing parcel configuration. So currently there are four parcels, three of which are 160 acres, one of which is 40. The proposed adjustment is in the orange box. Two parcels will be 85 acres each. with a third parcel 190 and the fourth parcel 160. So the change, the major change, I would say, is parcel one will be 85 acres and it will be aligned along the road. And this is the tank road, and we'll get into the which road's which a little further down the discussion. Also, parcel two will be an 85-acre parcel. The appeal issues that were brought up prior to this hearing is that the appellant believes that the applicant does not have legal access across his property. Here's an aerial of the site. This blow-up version shows you this to the north is Nacimiento Lake Drive, and then this road that comes along here has been named many things, is what we're finding. It was Old Stagecoach, County Road Number 1. Recently I looked at Google Maps, and they're calling it B-Rock Road, so just to throw out another road. But this is essentially the issue before you. Dr. Henry owns property here in this general area. The tank road is here. The Army tank has a road that it's, I believe, well-maintained to access the camp. It's used exclusively by the National Guard, and I believe neighbors are able to cross the road, but they may not use it for other than just crossing it. So that's that. Here's another aerial of the site. This, again, is Nacimiento Lake Drive, and these are the roads in question, I will say. A third view is looking north, gutter property, Henry property. Here's the property boundary, county of San Luis Obispo Monterey boundary there. So with that, just to explain a little bit what staff did is we had been requesting information from the County of Monterey to let us know if this site has legal access through County of Monterey. A few days prior to the Planning Department hearing, we did receive a letter that Jim Orton with County Council Office reviewed that he believed that the Mr. Gutter does have legal access. And the issue is that Monterey County believes there has always been some sort of road in that general area, and it has never been abandoned. County of Monterey is not saying that they know where the physical, where the road exists physically. And then County of San Luis Obispo, we rely on the Public Works Department. They have reviewed many documents regarding this site, and they also believe that County Road Number 1 ran in this general area. It has never been abandoned. They believe Mr. Gutter does have legal access. Again, no documents and no discussion was made or decisions were made that Mr. Gutter has physical access. So, and here we are today. So, as Matt indicated, the appellant's attorney is requesting a continuance, and so I'm available for questions.
All right, any questions, Mr. Meacham?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Nall, in this letter that we received, it suggests that these three existing lots are conforming and one is non-conforming, and that if the lot line adjustment were to be rendered, two would become non-conforming. Is that...
As you know, our the zoning ordinance for rural land is very complicated. We do have performance zoning. In my best estimate, I believe the northern parcels have an 80-acre minimum, but that's based on having a 40-foot access road, so I'm presuming that they still have access to a county road. Most county roads were approximately 50 feet wide, so that's an assumption on my part. And then the fire response to the upper parcels, the two upper 85-acre parcels, CAL FIRE ran that a couple of years ago, and came up with a 14-minute response time, that would allow an 80-acre parcel minimum there. So I believe the lower parcels would require this 160-acre minimum.
And so, and then the other comment relative to the Class 5 categorical exemption under CEQA.
It's our staff's practice for lot line adjustments that if the lot line adjustment does not facilitate additional development, then a categorical exemption is appropriate. And in this case, staff believes that the density is the same. The four lot parcel map lot line adjustment resulting in four parcels, the density will not change.
So if, hypothetically, this were to move forward and to allow for the lot line adjustments, there would still need to be some type of a physical identification of this roadway established by what means, some legal means of how does that transpire?
Correct. And this is the path that we don't like to send applicants. We like to work these kind of easements out ahead of time before they get into building permit time. But it would require some sort of legal information as to the physical location of the road, the width of the road, prior to issuance of any kind of land use permit or construction permit.
And because this is done in two jurisdictions, in a sense, does this have any bearing on their land use, what they allow for their acreage, their zoning, versus what we allow?
No, because we're just limited to our interest in the San Francisco County parcels.
Thank you.
What I'd like to do then, my proposal would be to open it to the appellant and the applicant to speak on the matter of the continuance at this point, and then I'd like my colleagues to decide what we want to do on that. If we decide to proceed, we can go to the substance. So if agent of the appellant or the appellant is here, would like to speak on the question of continuance, and I will open it to the applicant as well.
Yes, good morning, and thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. My name is John Bridges. I'm an attorney in Monterey with the law firm of Fenton & Keller, and I represent Dr. Henry, who is also here today, the appellant. And to the issue of continuance, Mr. Chair, yes, we have requested a continuance. I've spoken with staff and county council, understand that there's no staff objection to that continuance, and I think that there are several good reasons for that. First of all, we were operating under a bit of a disadvantage, I'll say. I only received the staff report yesterday morning, so my letter was written in haste, but I felt I needed to get something to you because staff advised that there was no unilateral right to a continuance. It's a matter of discretion before your board. So I would like additional time. We would like additional time to respond to the issues on the substance and the merit. As Ms. Nall has indicated, it's preferred to work these issues out, particularly with regard to easement matters, ahead of time, and we think that would be appropriate in this instance. There are several legal issues, the access being the primary issue, but I think there are also pretty significant CEQA questions that should be considered before this project moves forward. And it would also give us additional time to speak with the applicant. And in fact, I have had communications with the applicant's attorney, and we have talked about getting together to meet about the issue. And in my world, private resolution is always better than public. So I would encourage the continuance. I think 3 to 4 months would be an appropriate time frame, particularly if an initial study is going to be prepared. But in any event, that will give us time to discuss the matter with your counsel, with Monterey County Council, and hopefully with the applicant. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And I'd offer the applicant the chance to speak to the matter of continuance. If you'd come down, I'd appreciate it. And Karen, if we could orient the microphone there or turn on the wireless property. Yeah, let's see if we can get that one going. On the bottom, on the... have a red light? No, the button's on the bottom.
Hold it on the bottom.
What we can also do is bring that boom mic over...
The other one on the overhead projector,
just sort of swing that up over the projector.
Let
as he can make it happen for us.
Thank you.
If you could give us your name for the record, please.
Thank you. My name is Wendell Gutter, G-U-T-T-E-R. I live in Aptos, California, and I'm the person who has put in this application. I started this application 6 or 7 years ago when Mr. Tim Smith was the head of the so many different people, so many different titles and things.
Mr. Smith was our right-of-way agent from the
right-of-way
Public Works Department.
And Mr. Smith pointed out to me after it was that I'd been trying to. First of all, I did a lot line. I did a merger, and the merger was under the fellow who is no longer. He's gone. He retired.
And again, if you could speak to the question of the continuance.
I'm asking the board to please go with the staff report. They have been very diligent. They have been more than diligent. I have gone through the stages, and I know as much about probably about what's going on in here, and I'm asking to yield to the staff. No more continuances. It's just going to cost me too much money. It's just too much money, and I had to come tonight, today, to get a hotel to make sure that we're here on time, and then we get this letter saying, hey, everything that you already resolved and staff has already resolved, we're challenging again. And I'm saying no, please, no more continuances to please go with what their staff has done. They've done a diligent job. County Council has reviewed the letter. We've gone by the letter. We have followed everything, and all of these questions have been answered and been addressed by staff. Please, no more. No more.
All right. Thank you.
Question.
Let me question Mr. Shajan.
Thank you, sir, for your time and effort to get here. My question is, and I recognize your need not to continue this for the reasons of distance, cost, and the time that you have put in already, but our decision here today, regardless which direction we go, cannot be final or might not be final because it can still be challenged to a higher authority, and that's still costly. So I'm thinking what's best to both concern, both of you, because as I said, we might make a decision in your favor or their favor, but that's not a final decision. Either one of you can challenge us to a higher court. That means still expensive to both parties and time-consuming. You give that any thought?
Yes, but we've given that thought. What we plan on doing at this point is asking for a temporary restraining order so that we can get to court without us having to go through this whole process of litigation to have the court make a decision on it.
Okay, thank you, sir.
All right. Let me bring it back to the board for a consideration of how we want to go from here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, I think. this is difficult, I do appreciate the gentleman's difficulty in making arrangements to be here. A question that I do have for staff, I heard that the legal counsel received this yesterday, but this has been noticed how long?
We spoke with the appellant July 6th is when we formalized this board date.
So the appellant's decision to get this to the attorney, that took some time apparently on their part. That had nothing to do with this gentleman's ability to get here when this was scheduled. And even as Mr. Asajian says, even if we make a determination today to go forward, this is all predicated upon a legal finding to establish this easement, I would assume.
You'd defer that to the question of the County Council.
Well, that's one of the issues. I would also indicate that the letter of appeal that was filed on June 15, 2009, page C-211, does not mention any of the issues regarding the categorical exemption and whether it's appropriate. That's been a new issue that's raised, and I don't know if staff has responded to it. I think one of the purposes of the continuance was to allow them to address that issue. The requirement for lot line adjustments and their approval are set forth in our Title 21, and it requires a determination whether or not the requirements of the general plan, zoning, and building ordinance have been complied with, and if the situation after the adjustment is equal to or better than the situation before, that's a criteria that you use for approving an adjustment. I'm not sure that that issue has been really looked at. Everybody has been talking about did it conform to the minimum sizes required by the ordinance, but the equal to or better is an overlay on it.
Could I just jump in on one thing that occurs to me is relevant? We recently considered the lot line adjustment on the Hearst Ranch, where it was brought forward that there was CEQA implications of lot line adjustments, but this board chose to go with the environmental determination of that project, which I believe was it a negative deck or was it a...
In that case, there had been a negative declaration prepared after an initial study was done. In this particular case, an initial study has not been prepared because staff determined that it qualified for a categorical exemption as a minor lot line adjustment. So that was a different situation where we had prepared an initial study and a negative declaration.
Okay.
So I guess what I'm looking for is that a little bit of legal direction in terms of our ability to make a decision today. If we proceed with this hearing and this appeal, and we make a determination that we go with staff's recommendation, this is fully appealable in a legal court, I would assume.
That's correct, and one of the issues that I had brought up, the initial appeal letter did not say anything about the environmental review for this project. That was first brought up in the letter that was submitted yesterday by Mr. Bridges, and I don't know if staff has looked at that issue and is prepared to respond. If there's a continuance, staff would have an opportunity to evaluate that issue and respond to it.
And if I have a couple other lights on, Mr. Meacham, we can go down the line before we take action on the continuance or not. If there are any other members of the public who want to address the question of continuance, I will take their comments here. But let me go to Supervisor Patterson first and then Mr. Ashajian.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. My line of questioning follows that of Supervisor Meacham's, and that is the opinion as to whether or not what we're acting on today is a simple lot line adjustment, and staff did evaluate it and make a determination that it was CEQA exempt based on what you mentioned, Mr. Orton, that it's equal to or better than what currently exists. I mean, that's my understanding. Are you saying that that isn't the case?
No, what I was saying is that the new issue that's been raised is to whether or not this would, a categorical exemption could be used for this. And staff has addressed the land use density part of it being a minor lot line adjustment, but there's another issue been raised as to whether or not this is an exceptional circumstance to where a categorical exemption could not be used, and that has not been evaluated by staff. I think that staff needs to be able to respond to that, and if they need more time to prepare and do that, I would recommend a continuance.
Okay. Well, then, the question to staff is that something that you can readily evaluate, or is it something that will take some time and research?
Matt Jansen again. I guess the way I would answer that is to first comment on something Jim just said. It's not that staff hasn't done an analysis as to whether the exemption is appropriate or not. We have, but I would call it a preliminary analysis, an initial look, if you will. And the appellant's representative bringing it up in this continuance letter has us second-guessing, if you will, as to whether that's appropriate. So we would want to look at that again. And the reason I mentioned 4 months is if we decide that we need to do more, and perhaps a negative initial study and negative declaration are necessary, we will need all of 4 months to get it done and bring it to you. It's possible that in 4 months we bring back that the Class 5 exemption is perfectly fine, and we bring back information to support that. We just don't know without that second look.
Mr. Shajan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Listening to both staff and council, I'm questioning the safety net that we have as a county. Obviously, our decision can be challenged, and the discussion that's going back and forth doesn't put me in a comfort zone. Just go ahead. I don't think that going ahead with that buzz in my head doing the applicant any favor, because then when it does go to court, that's the reason that the appellant has hired an attorney. Might more harm than any good to the applicant. I like to be in favor of his request to move forward for the time and effort he has put in. But with the questions that we're raising here, does question as if we're rushing into this or not. So I want to, and we're not indemnified as what direction, if we choose to go the direction of the applicant, as a council, how would you put us in a safe zone by moving forward or continuing this item?
Well, I would recommend it be continued so that the issues could be examined and responded to.
If that's one, okay.
Are you kind of, thank you, Mr. Shajin. Are you contemplating a motion, Mr.
Well, Mayor? No. What I want to know, though, is the thing that bothers me with this appeal, in a sense, is the fact that now we see a CEQA issue, which wasn't there before. If we come back and continue this, I don't want to see it at the last moment, something else all of a sudden being thrown in here. So can we be specific to what we're going to be looking at if we do continue this? Or is there, do they have every opportunity at the last minute to bring in something else?
Well, this is a de novo hearing. They can raise any issues. One of the problems with the issue that was raised in the letter yesterday is it was not raised when the appeal was first filed, and staff didn't have an opportunity to respond to it. But they can always raise any issue prior to the time it's concluded by the board.
At the last minute, it's not fair to the applicant to do that. But, you know, with all respect, sir, and I understand completely your difficulty of distance and the cost to get here. From what I heard you say, you've been going through this, what, 6 or 7 years?
Yes, sir.
So, in my opinion, to...
I can anticipate what you're going to tell me, because that's what everybody's been telling me for 7 years. Another 3 or 4 months won't hurt that much, Mr. Gutter. And what I've got is all the documentation that I've been asked for from the staff, every bit of it. I've had it documented and checked and gone over with the legal researcher, all the titles. I've got the original road, the original from Monterey County and San Luis Obispo County, the original...
Will you use the mic, sir, please?
Yeah, the original laying out the road. And everybody agrees it has never been abandoned. And that's the only issue, is the road up until now. With these things that have been brought in to Ms. Nahler this morning, I had no idea of those things. And we looked at the letter, and everything that's been brought up has been answered to staff.
I understand that, and I sympathize with that situation. However, I have yet to see anything in our report anywhere that does clarify legally that road, that easement. We haven't been able to determine that from what I understand. And secondly, sir, you may have gone through the 6 or 7 years. I've just seen this. And so to get this to clarity and to make sure that we're within our legal bounds, I would suggest that we take this to a continuance to December, and then come to a conclusion at that point in time. Because my concern is this: if we make a determination, this will be appealed in a legal through a legal channel. Then you're going to be tied up in court. If in this process between now and a 3-month continuance, there can be something worked out between both parties, that'll alleviate a tremendous amount of cost for one and time for another. But I would like to make specific that we don't come up to the last minute with all of a sudden another challenge, and if we can get these refined. So I would make the a recommendation or motion that we would...
If we hold the motion for just a minute, yes. I would like to just do two things. Madam Clerk, could you give us our first meeting date in December? Okay, that's what I needed to know. So we're contemplating a continuance to December 1st. We'll come back for the motion. I would open it to the public. Mr. Sajjan, did you have a question you wanted to ask first?
No, sir. I want to make a comment that I do agree with Supervisor Mitchum. And from your point of view, sir, the better job we do here, the stronger case you would have. So allow us to do that job for you, strengthen your case so that when it comes back to us, we finalize it, and if it was to be challenging court, you better have us on your side of the fence with a job well done.
All right,
may
you.
I answer one question?
Yes, sir.
The surveys, your question or your concern again was the existence of the road?
Has there been a legally established easement through there? I haven't heard that there in fact is one.
I think, Mr. Meacham, one of the things we would typically need to do is have our staff be appraised of those legalities, and I think that's the question. Contemplating a continuance to December 1st, I would open it to the public who wished to speak on the matter of the continuance. And seeing none, I'll close it to the public today. I guess the other question was members of the public who could not be present on December 1st. And seeing no one, we'll close it to the public at this point. Mr. Meacham, your motion then?
I'm going to make a motion that we continue to our first meeting in December.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Supervisor Patterson makes a good point. We can schedule this for the afternoon session to allow Mr. Gutter travel time during the morning. So if we could note that direction to staff when you request a time. Let's see where this motion goes. It can be carried on a voice vote. All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, none. So we are continued to the afternoon of December 1st.
Thank you.
Madam Clerk, if you'd introduce our next item, please.
Next item is D1, a consideration to reestablish the contract change order limit for Phase 2 of the Cambria Flood Control Project, contract number 300400, and discuss implementation and local funding options for Phase 3 of Cambria Flood Control Project, 2nd District.
Thank you. The gentleman down the dais looks vaguely familiar. Your name for the record, please.
I am Pablo Ogren, your Public Works Director.
And
ready to proceed?
Yes, please.
We have a PowerPoint presentation, and as Dean's loading that up, I'll just begin. The Cambria Flood Control Project is a three-phase project where phases one and two are complete. Phase one was complete a few months ago. We'll have a couple of pictures on that. Phase two, the construction aspect of it is complete, but there is an action item in front of your board today in order to approve change orders. We're working on four different of these large drain pipes under your board. Recently completed one in San Miguel, are about to embark on one, hopefully, if we get the environmental permits in Santa Margarita. Have one that went out to bid in Los Osos at Los Osos Valley Road in Palisades, and then this project in Cambria. And in all cases, the projects are certainly proving challenging due to underground conflicts with existing utilities such as wastewater lines, and we do go through a process of potholing in order to try to identify them as much as possible, but again, it's pretty common in these types of projects to find unforeseen conditions. One of the items is, again, as Dean is getting this loaded up, is that we're also internally reevaluating lessons learned on these types of projects. And whereas your action item today is going to be considering approval of some change orders, in the future what we are going to be doing is recommending that when we go out to bid that we have an allowance within the bid document itself in anticipation of some of these unforeseen conditions that we're going to encounter. Are we ready to load that up? So the project is in Cambria. And I've covered a little bit of the background already. This was the flooding that we had in March of 1995, the northern end of the community. Generally, it's in the West Village. There's three phases to the project. This is the new bridge that we built, and there's going to be another picture of it, and it's called the bypass. And essentially, down here is where the creek has historically gone underneath Highway 1, and by building the new bridge and having the bypass, This then area that's shaded in becomes our bypass channel that will flood, and then again a second way for the water to get beyond Highway 1 and out to the ocean. This facility itself will handle approximately 85% of the water that flooded the West Village in 1995. The second phase, and the one that we've had a lot of the change orders on, is, and of course on this map you can't see the elevation, but these are up in the hills, and this is the pressure storm drain where the new concrete pipes that we'll have some pictures on are as large as 54 inches, and then they also, it also comes underneath the highway and then outlets into Santa Rosa Creek. So that's the action item for today, is to consider those change orders that have been, that we've been working on. And then the third phase of the project here would essentially encompass a pump station, and then we'd be able to do a force main underneath the highway to outlet it. And then this is the project where we've got then the board discussion option in terms of five different options. Overall, the approach to the project has been that we've got significant FEMA money. Initially, there was about a $2 million allocation in the late 1990s, and then they added about another $2 million a few years ago. And so this is the type of a project where we build it in phases. We get as far as we can, identifying the higher priority improvements first, and then see how far we can go with wrapping up the final improvements. So this is the picture of the bypass channel. We had the opening ceremonies earlier this year, late last year, and there's actually a lot of revegetation that's been taking place since this picture was put in, but, you know, again, a new bridge and more capacity underneath the highway. Again, this is a little bit more detailed version of the new underground piping system to take water up from the hills and get it down into the creek so it doesn't flood the West Village. And then this is just an engineering drawing of the third phase, which would be the pipe, the pump station, and then underneath the freeway where it's called horizontal built boring, but essentially it's a horizontal drilling operation to get, I think it's a 40-inch or a 42-inch pipe underneath the highway. Okay, so then in terms of the project budget overall, again, just over $4 million from FEMA. There was an assessment of district approved by homeowners in the 1990s that has provided about $750,000. They also have a little integrated financing district that relates to undeveloped properties, and the assessments also will provide us with around $15,000 a year for annual operational costs. But there has also been inflation over the period of time since the project has been developed. You know, it was originally envisioned over 10 years ago. And the supplemental local funding has been provided in the last decade plus through the flood control district and through reserves of the flood control district. And so that is a fairly significant local funding from the flood control district itself, but obviously a very good project also. And in terms of board policies and providing local funding in order to match grants, you know, it's a 4-to-1 ratio in terms of our local flood control district money to the FEMA money. A little bit more detailed on the expenditures, the engineering, environmental, and permits, and there was an extensive NEPA process in order to get the environmental documents approved, about $1.6 million. The actual construction of the bypass channel, the new bridge, was $2.3 million. So those were almost $4 million, and then this gravity pressure storm drain system is coming in at about $1.5 million. And so that's phase one and two, again, that have been completed. On phase two itself, $1.2 million for the construction, and then the two sets of change orders. On June 23rd, your board approved about $101,000, and then on change orders 8 through 18, which we're recommending approval today, that's about $187,000. And as a little bit of a backup, we have to come to your board because the public contract code provides a limitation to which your board can delegate to staff the authority to approve change orders. And so it's clearly important that the public contract code says that when a project has change orders in excess of those statutory, you know, authority to delegate, that it needs to come back to the governing board so that everybody in the public is aware of the extent of the change orders. But it still is certainly within the parameters for approval. We also wanted, I asked made sure that our project manager, Tom Trott, who's not here today, I should introduce Pete Newell, who's in the audience to the left. He's our resident engineer, so he's the construction manager on the site and has been working the project during the construction phase and will be available to answer some of the questions if your board has them. But in terms of, you know, the engineer's estimate of $1.15 million, the low bid came in at, you know, just $100,000 over that, and then what our actual costs are coming in is just slightly higher than the engineer's estimates. So overall magnitude of the change orders that we're seeing are still pretty darn consistent with our original engineer's estimates. One of the things that we're learning that in our economic environment right now, where we're seeing good bids coming in, we're also finding that the contractors are being very guarded or very change order oriented. They're looking at the construction documents very closely and making sure to submit change orders, and that sort of makes logical sense since they're sharpening pencils during the bidding environment. They're also making sure to go after everything they can. A little bit of pre-construction photos. These one is on Main Street. I'm not sure the left one, but one of the challenges is that in the village area itself, very flat terrain, and so being able to make sure to put those underground pipes in and still get some great fall in them has been a challenge. One of the good things here is that this drain facility on the left side here, which from a road safety standpoint is a hazard, we've been able to eliminate that. And we had a similar one on Noyes Road maybe 10 years ago or so that resulted in a pretty bad accident that we've been eliminating. So as a side benefit of this project, again, being able to eliminate a significant safety hazard. Some of the other challenges are just coming down the hills, pretty tight turns, drop falls, and again, putting in, here's an example of one of the sewers that mains and some of the challenges that are underground. But even the just basic topography is challenging. Again, couple more pre-construction. Looking at the time, I think I've sort of covered these points already, utility conflicts. And here's some of the examples. Here's where we get into the trenching operations, and here's a sewer main that we ended up having to divert and then run alongside the pipe, because, of course, this is our new drain pipe. There's also some that you can't see in this photo, waterline conflicts on that side of the trench. Again, an old clay pipe sewer system. We know that we won't be building those clay pipe sewer systems anymore. This was just a trenching that is falling. There were some adjacent trenches from a water line that had been put in. So when we're doing trenching activities, excessive collapsing of the trenches was proving challenging. Not sure if this is a gas line or a water line, but yet another conflict in. Challenge here is when we're putting in these big concrete drain pipes and trying to work around these little ones. Again, just one case after another of the conflicts that we're running into. And, I think this is an example of where we're running against the gas, and so we have to park the backhoe and do a lot of hand work when you've got gas lines that are running parallel to your trenching activities. And this one, another conflict. So we just wanted to give sort of a number of examples of the different conflicts that Pete and the contractor were facing during construction itself. Last, this is again an aerial view of where we're going to. This is the property location for the pump station, and where we'd be under boring underneath the highway. And that initial shot of the flooding. Showed the gas station there on the left side.
Just to note, at the point of that sort of reddish square, there was 12 feet of water standing in 1995.
Okay, so then in terms of phase three and what our options there are, we could stop pump station work, stop project work altogether. That would return about $287,000 to FEMA. Purchase the property and complete the design, that would cost us, it would require a budget augmentation of about $25,000, and still a good chunk of the FEMA money. What three does is it constructs the outlet work to Santa Rosa Creek. And what that does is allows us to complete all of the work that would that is covered by the current environmental determination. So if we don't go to 3 today, and we go to 3 at some future point in time, then we'll have to redo environmental work. So at a minimum, we really think that doing option 3 is important so that we don't have to redo the environmental work, because that would be very expensive in comparison to what would be relatively lower future facilities costs. Option 4 in the staff report identified our preference, because that would also accomplish the boring underneath the highway, and essentially what it would allow us to do is to get that site set up so that we could bring in temporary pump stations. And then option 5 would be completing everything with permanent pump stations. Option 5 we don't think is fiscally feasible, because in addition to the higher operating costs, I mean the higher construction costs, it would also have annual costs that of maintaining the pumps and making sure that they're working that we don't have budget for. Option 5 is something that if we do option 4, then we can talk to the community about whether or not they want to consider a subsequent assessment in order to get the rest of it built. With respect to option 4, which again is our preference, where would the $250,000 come from? And essentially it would come from the flood control district's general reserves. Those reserves right now, or overall, we have designated reserves, but the overall reserves in the flood control district are about $2 million. And so $250,000 is a pretty significant hit on those flood control district reserves. But we also have a separate backstop, and the separate backstop is right now there's about $5 million in reserves associated with the Nacimiento Water Fund, which has been historically collected on a countywide basis. And the way that the Nacimiento project contracts were negotiated is that those historical reserves, the reserves that exist at the time that that project goes online, will be your board's discretion as to how they are spent. Future property tax allocations that would otherwise go to the Nacimiento Fund are dedicated to the Nacimiento project because that project hasn't been fully subscribed yet. Once that project at some unknown date in the future is fully subscribed, then those tax allocations will also come back to the board for, you know, some future project in, you know, 10, 15, 20 years or so. But the historical reserves that have been built up through countywide property tax collections of around $5 to $6 million will become your board's discretion. So today we only have $2 million in reserves, and I'd be really nervous about the recommendation on the $250,000, except for knowing that there will be some more reserves for your board's discretion in what should be about a year's time or sooner. One of, the sort of last noteworthy comment that I need to make is that the policies that date back into the 70s on the flood control money and working with communities have primarily been focused on studies, that whenever we implement projects, we expect the local community to form an assessment district in order to come up with the local share of the money. Certainly that policy was followed for the Cambria Flood Control Project when the assessment district was approved in the late 1990s. But also just, you know, the physical improvements and getting those done and having, you know, this part wrapped up, this infrastructure need wrapped up for the community is, you know, compelling us to want to go with option number 4. That I will, we will be glad to answer any questions.
Questions, Mr. Patterson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Ogren and Mr. Benedict, relative to this overall project, was there an opportunity to incorporate any low impact development features in this project?
At the time we developed, Dean Benedict from Public Works, at the time we developed the plan, we did not. I think the detention basin, which was the first phase, the bypass, does in itself provide recharge. The pump station, the way Cambria is laid out with the culverts under the freeway that exist now, provides some of that, but the pump station is difficult to do that. I guess the storm drain itself is a pressure storm drain, which tries to take care of the hydraulic pressure problem with Cambria that it has. So the detention basin or the bypass does, but that would be the only element that would significantly do that.
And I noticed in the aerials and the other photographs that there's an awful lot of hard surface that you're
having to deal with that already exists. I don't know if there's the opportunity to try to keep some of that water on site, but I was curious, Supervisor Gibson, in that one aerial of Phase 3 indicated that there was 12 feet of water backed up there, and I was just curious, what serves as the dam there? Is that the freeway or the highway that causes that?
The dam at the time is basically we had a high tide, and Santa Rosa Creek was flowing full, and there was no place for the water to get under the freeway. The Cambria only drains, West Village only drains when the water level in Santa Rosa Creek is lower than the culverts that drain into Santa Rosa Creek.
Well, and that was my next question. I'm curious because I heard the same thing, that it was a function of Santa Rosa Creek not being able to take care of the water, and I'm curious if the analysis has been done to determine if work needs to be done to Santa Rosa Creek to ensure that all that water you're channeling into it, it can accommodate it.
The timing of the storms and the water coming into the creek is somewhat important here also. I think the creek has a capacity to take the water. The problem is just getting it under into the creek itself.
What happened, Mr. Patterson, in brief, is in this phase one, before that bridge was there, the water actually came on down into toward where the phase three situation is. And so now by diverting that water up gradient, you can get it into the creek. And in fact, phase three takes care of about 85% of the, or phase one takes care of about 85% of the flood problem. Phase two takes care of another 10%, but there's still a low spot right there at the phase three spot that I think Public Works has actually come to the right balance there on what we need to do with the potential of temporary.
So it's really that phase one that takes care of all that water and backs up in that low-lying area there that meters it.
Significant, and a significant option of recharge there. Any other questions of staff?
If I might add on phase two and phase three, recognizing those pressure issues, that's why this is essentially sealed down in the lower. You build your head up in the hills, and you develop the pressure then so that you can fight against the creek flows. And then on the pressure pump station here, there ends up being a flap gate or some sort of a gate there so that if the creek level rises, it doesn't back up and go into the West Village. And then the pumps can, you know, can pump against the pressure of the creek in order to get it to clean it out, even if there is a high tide.
Basically injecting it into the creek.
Exactly. Any other questions? Mr. Meacham.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Probably in regard to the funding aspect of this, you mentioned that there's $2 million in the flood control district's reserves, but there's $5 million in the NASMIANO.
In the NASMIANO fund, that's correct. And those are all part of the normal 1% property tax pie.
So, I mean, are you suggesting that you combine a little of each to get to the 250, or take one from what?
No, our preference right now would be we're seeking board direction today. We would actually come back next week with the formal budget adjustments, but it would be just to come out of the out of the flood control district reserves right now,
knowing that we could backfill that at some point if we had to.
Yeah, because I would anticipate in the 2009, so the 2010-11 budget is when we would make the adjustments on those NASMIANO reserves, because that's about the time NASMIANO would go online front of your board at that point. So at this point, it would just be from the general flood control.
And then how do you keep putting the reserves into that flood control district? How is that generated?
Since the funding sources are just property tax revenues and interest income, then it's just simply a matter of having a budget that there's a little bit of money left over every year. We typically show a budget that's balanced, where revenues and expenditures are equal, but we generally don't expend, the full size of the budget. And so whatever rolls through FBA ends up going into the reserves the subsequent year. This last year, we actually got, last 2 years, we were able to sell some excess state water to Santa Barbara County and generate, I think, about $1.6 million through sales that have helped to cover some extra program costs. We're funding our master water plan update with a lot of that revenue, but again, we've been able to build up some reserves from sale of water to Santa Barbara County as well.
All right. Thank you. Seeing no other questions for staff, I'll open it to the public. I don't have any requests to speak. That is on closed session. So no requests to speak on this item. Seeing no one coming forward, I'll bring it back to the board. If there are no other questions or comments from colleagues, I would move that this board approve change orders 8 through 18 on the Cambria Flood Control Project contract number 300400 and direct staff to bring back appropriate actions to implement option 4 for phase 3 of that project. Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Madam Clerk, a roll call, please.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Meacham?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Astagian?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
All right. Thank you. We appreciate to see this one be brought to conclusion. That brings us to closed session. Let me do one thing before we take public comment on closed session, which I meant to do at the end of public comment first, and this is really for the listening audience on broadcast, since we don't have much of an audience left in person here. But I meant to announce again that we have secured the services of Mr. Jim Grant as our county administrative officer through the end of 2010, and we, on behalf of my colleagues, I'd like to thank you for the work you've done so far in bringing stability and management and vision to this organization, and we look forward to the next 18 months or so working with you on a number of interesting projects that we'll be talking about in the future.
Thank you very much.
With that, then, I have one request to speak on closed session, Dr. C. Height.
Dr. C. Height, Los Osos. Pending litigation, Wilcox versus the county, Sunny Acres versus the county. I have concerns about a sense of fairness and ask the county to settle these matters. The longer you let these matters go, the more negative attention will be directed towards the county. You are irreparably harming the status of women in this county. The sexist attitude that serving the people is so mind-numbing, boring, that the men in power need the perk of surrounding themselves with young women who flirt. Not just young, pretty, smart women who flirt. So what is amazing is that I've been keeping up on what's going on in the paper. You spend an awful lot of money investigating Gail Wilcox, and for whatever she has done or not done, the bottom line is she deserved a work environment in which there were not sexist comments directed towards her. It doesn't matter that she's tough. I mean, that's like saying, well, she knew Kung Fu, so she could never possibly be raped. You're damaging the status of women when you moralize this. There's a separation of church and state. It can never be a politically issue of morality. It needs to be an issue of that your former administrator should have known better. When it comes to the Sunny Acres, you know, interesting enough, you never censored your former administrator, and he appeared to be pulling strings after he was fired. However, the Sunny Acres issue seems to be censored now because there's a gag order. You know, I've been watching this whole thing with the housing, you being out of compliant with HUD, out of compliant with the state, and they've hit upon this issue of fair housing. And the county, the longer you let the Sunny Acres issue go, the more you will be exposed as a county who just simply doesn't abide to a lot of law and code. And that's the only thing that a judge is going to care about is the law and the code. You know, fair housing is outlined very clearly, and this is a fair housing issue, and there seems to be a sense of unfairness now that the county can try to you know, spend a lot of money and make their case before they get to court when it comes to the Wilcox issue. But when the public starts speaking up for Sunny Acres, then all of a sudden the public's supposed to be afraid to speak up now. And I'm certainly interested in handicapped people having good housing, but it needs to look fair. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Height. That concludes public comment on closed session. We'll close it to the public. Mr. Jensen?
Approximately an hour.
About an hour. We will be back to report out of closed session, but we are adjourned for the day on open session items. Thank you.